It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Abby Hornacek.
I'm Ben Domenech.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, February 27th, 2023, I'm Mike Emanuel. Intelligence reports suggest China is considering sending arms to help Russia in the war against Ukraine, leading to calls from some senior policymakers to give the Ukrainians everything they need to win this war.
They're not asking us to get involved. They're just saying, give us the tools and let us win this thing. And of course, it's better to do it quickly.
We speak with Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker.
I'm Chris Foster. An experimental 4-day work week's a big hit with employers and employees.
It's one of those policies that sounds good on paper, but when you start to implement it, there's so many caveats and this business doesn't work that way and I can't do it. Makes no sense.
We've got Jerry Willis from Fox Business.
And I'm Tommy Lahren. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
A year into Russia's war on Ukraine, there are growing questions here in the United States about how it all ends and about intelligence reports suggesting China is considering providing arms to the Russians. President Biden addressed that with ABC News.
I don't anticipate, we haven't seen it yet, but I don't anticipate a major initiative on the part of China providing weaponry to Russia.
Former Defense Secretary under President Trump, Mark Esper, explained why China is so concerned.
They recognize that Russia is losing, because they are, and they cannot afford to have their strategic partner lose this fight. They rely on Russia for energy. They rely on Russia for high-tech items, for military items, and so they cannot afford to see Russia fail.
However, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told NBC so far Beijing is not providing weapons.
To date, we have not seen China supply lethal aid to Ukraine, and we are continuing to make the case for why that would be a terrible mistake for them.
Amidst this continued aggression from adversaries overseas, Louisiana Republican Senator John Kennedy says the U.S. must stand strong.
We have decided to defend Ukraine. If you decide to be a bear, be a grizzly. We can't blink, especially when you're dealing with hard men like these.
And even though Russia is the aggressor, some are betting on the underdog in this fight.
Ukraine can actually win this war this year.
Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker is the top Republican on the Armed Services Committee.
And I don't base that on something that I've concluded. Listening to the former Secretary of Defense, listening to General Keane, who speaks regularly to the public, the people who actually are watching this and seeing what's on the ground and seeing the failure of the late winter attempt at a surge by Russia are telling us that Ukraine can actually win. So my view is that we ought to be talking about victory. We ought to be talking about giving our Ukrainian friends the tools they need, including the long-range missiles, including the aircraft that they need, to actually win this war. And I think much of that can be done this spring and next summer.
The U.S. is continuing to aid Ukraine, with President Biden announcing that the U.S. plans to implement more sanctions against Russia that would impact more than 200 entities and or people. And the Pentagon rolling out an additional security assistance package to Ukraine. Do you think he is getting it right and his leadership team is getting it right at this stage, or does he need to be much more aggressive?
I've supported sanctions since January of last year. I'm less impressed with sanctions the more we see how the Russians can get around it and just basically do business with other parts of the world that don't feel quite as strongly. It also convinces me that sanctions aren't going to be helpful for us in dealing with China later on. What I think is that the president does something positive, like going to Kyiv and showing a support and a resolve. And then he pours cold water over his message again and again. This has happened throughout the war. And it happened just the other day. I mean, to then talk to European leaders and to reporters and say F-16s might be needed 2-3 years from now. Who knows what sort of aircraft needs the Ukrainians will have then. To me, that absolutely goes against the message of resolve and complete support that the president tried to show by going to meet with Zelensky and the leadership in Kyiv. That was an excellent thing to do, but that should be followed up by saying, we are going to let the Ukrainian soldiers have everything they need. We're not going to send them troops because they're not asking us to fight their fight for them. But right. We're going to give them what they need to win, and we're not going to talk about something dragging on for 2-3 years. I mean, if you want the American people to get tired of this, then that's the very worst message. The message we ought to give to the American people is, number one, this is in our interest. We do not want to live in a world where autocrats are continuously threatening the border of people surrounding them, not only Russians, but Chinese, and for that matter, Iranians. But also the other message is, the Ukrainians have shown the resolve to win if they right. just have the tools. If we were involved in this war right now, of course we would be using F-16s, and we mm-hmm. would be using ATACMS long-range missiles and every tool that we have. They're not asking us to get involved. They're just saying, give us the tools and let us win this thing. And of course, it's better to do it quickly. And it'll be awful for it to drag on 2-3 years.
Let's bring China into the conversation. The United States received intelligence that China's in talks with Russia about aiding Russian armed forces with potentially lethal drones and ammunition, but nothing is just set just yet. Do you think there's a high probability of China getting involved in this conflict, and how would their entrance impact the war?
Well, I think it is certainly highly possible. I don't know if it's more likely than not, but we ought to be mindful of that, and we ought to act as if it is likely that they'll get involved. But I will tell you, they don't want to be on the losing side of this. Xi Jinping does not want to get in on the wrong side of this and lose face. And so the more convinced he becomes that the West, our NATO allies and United States, are going to help achieve victory soon, the less likely the Chinese will be to help Putin and the Russian war crimes, but also to do something foolish and, frankly, world-changing in the Western Pacific. So there's every reason, if you're worried about China, to want victory in Ukraine.
On the topic of China, you know, they've been showing increasingly aggressive behavior, from the close ties with Russia, the threats to invade Taiwan, of course, the Chinese spy balloon occupying U.S. airspace. Makes people wonder what China may do next. What do you believe needs to be done to confront the Chinese threat and hopefully deter Beijing from doing anything that could have serious impacts here in the U.S.?
The best way to deter China is to go back to the Ronald Reagan doctrine of peace through strength. And frankly, Mike, we're not as strong as we need to be in the Pacific. Our Navy is not as strong as it needs to be. And this is a bipartisan concern, regardless of how people feel about what's going on in Europe right now. We don't have the ships. We don't have the repair facilities that we need. And that's why, frankly, on a bipartisan basis, people like Chairman Jack Reed and Ranking Member Roger Wicker on the Armed Services Committee and our friends on the Democratic and Republican side in the House of Representatives are very much in favor of, once again, building on the increase in the defense spending, particularly in the Navy, that we were able to get through last year.
Let's talk about the debt in this nation, $31.5 trillion and growing every minute of every day. There are talks about potentially trimming some spending and trying to reach some kind of deal. What does the debt debate do in terms of national security? And, you know, do you worry about spending cuts as it relates to protecting our nation?
Well, spending cuts in terms of national security really ought to be totally off the table. We need to beef up our national defense to keep us out of war, mm-hmm. to keep Russia from trying to invade any other country, to make sure they lose this one, and to make China think not only twice but several times before they do anything aggressive. So cuts in the national defense budget, you may see a little talk among a small minority of members of the House and Senate, but it's nowhere near something that might happen. Now, that said, absolutely, the debt ceiling debate in 2023 is an opportunity to talk about our spending going forward, not only the 31-32% that is appropriated, but also the vast majority of the rest of it that's on automatic pilot. It is a necessary exercise, and really that's the reason, unlike a lot of industrialized countries, the rest of the world, it's the reason we have the debt ceiling, so we can periodically have that debate. Mm-hmm. And this is a debate that the Speaker of the House, Speaker McCarthy, wants to be in the driver's seat on, and I think that's absolutely appropriate. He and our Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States, will come to an agreement. I'm confident they will, and I expect that I will be able to support whatever Speaker McCarthy is able to negotiate. I have confidence in him.
One last question, if I may, on a more domestic note. The train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, causing hazardous chemicals to leak into the community's air and soil as well. And most recently, we've had some soil and water shipped from East Palestine to hazmat facilities in Texas and Michigan, with some officials saying they didn't realize the material was entering their state. What do you make of the communication on this aspect and the broader communication of the federal government's response to the East Palestine crisis?
Well, if I were an official in Michigan or Texas, I'd be pretty mad about this, and mm-hmm. I'd be wanting to get answers. And certainly if some hazardous material were scheduled to come through Mississippi, I would certainly want to know about it and want to know about the safety of that rail. So I absolutely think there's been a lack of transparency and, frankly, a lack of leadership. We're not even sure what malfunction. Was it the track? Was it the some aspect of the rail cars themselves? Mm-hmm. But this has been grossly mishandled from a PR standpoint, but also we need to get a better handle on how much hazardous waste of this type, how much material that could flame up like this and cause a major disaster and cause hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of damage to not only public infrastructure, but to property owners and residents. Mm-hmm. We need to get a handle on how we can do whatever we can to prevent this. And, of course, part of it is infrastructure. If there was an infrastructure defect in East Palestine, Ohio, we need to find out if that was the cause and if that needs to be remedied nationwide.
The top Republican of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Senator Roger Wicker, the great state of Mississippi, thank you so much for your time. Have a great week, sir.
Thank you, Mike.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
This is Tommy Lahren with your Fox News commentary coming up.
The 5-day, 40-hour work week became standard in American labor law in the 1930s. Why not 4 days instead for the same pay, getting the same amount of work done with an extra day off per week? A trial program in the United Kingdom finds it works out great, with happier, often even more productive workers, and most companies participating in the trial reporting that they'll stick with it. Research from the American employment agency Robert Half finds 64% of companies here expect to transition to a 4-day work week within the next 5 years.
Some staff members, for example, work Monday through Thursday 1 week. Others work Tuesday to Friday to make sure there's coverage 5 days during the week. So there's certainly logistics.
Robert Half, Senior District President Brett Good. Nate Jones works for the business consulting company CX Pilots. They went to a 4-day, 10-hour-a-day work week last year.
It's nice to actually feel like we do have off time and that we are protective of that time.
There are skeptics of the idea and the results of that experiment finding it largely a success.
My first problem is the study itself. Based in the UK, small number of companies, small number of employees, short period of time, just 6 months. And these companies were self-selected to be in the survey.
Fox Business reporter Jerry Willis.
So these are companies that might be open to doing this. These aren't people employing nurses in a hospital or reporters in a newsroom. These are companies that are probably in marketing or businesses like that who have more flexibility in their schedules. But I just don't buy this idea that we're going to model our economy on something folks in the UK do. Okay, we have the biggest economy on the planet. We have the most productive workforce ever. And, you know, we should make our own decisions. The whole idea that you would jump on board this now and advocate for this in your company, not a great idea. Like CEOs across the country at Meta, at Amazon, at Google, and even smaller companies throughout the country are now turning and looking at their workforces and saying, who can I get rid of? We're seeing layoffs across the board. And employers are tired of this attitude that, well, maybe I'll come into work today or maybe I'll work from home. We've already experienced a huge experiment with the whole work from home and the whole give employees, you know, all kinds of room to do what they needed to do. And it didn't work out that well, right? I mean, there were lots of problems for employers. They need to be able to tell their, you know, employee workforce what to do and when. And this seems to me something that cuts into that. But my real problem is, do you think you're going to work a 4-day work week and get paid the same amount of money as a 5-day work week? There, you know, the evidence that productivity is higher is really not that persuasive.
Well, that was one of the caveats to the experiment, basically. Like, okay, you have to do whatever. If you produce X number of widgets in 40 hours, now you're going to do it in 32. It's not necessarily fewer hours, too. It's a 4-day work week. You can set it up any way you want. You can do 4-10s. Different companies did it different ways. But like you said, obviously, it's not going to apply to every industry. You can't do it in every industry.
And think about this. I mean, here in our own shop, we do have people who work 4-day work weeks. They just work longer hours. You know, the idea that you would mandate this is crazy. The world already allows for employees that have special situations to negotiate their own deal with their employers. You know, if you have small kids at home and you, for a period of time, only want to work certain hours, or you want to work a shorter work week, or you want to work from home, there's nothing stopping you from going in and asking for that. But the idea that this is going to be a solution to kind of the problems of the workforce, I don't think so. I don't buy it.
The Jetsons, I think, promised us a 3-day work week. That didn't work out. But look, I mean, Richard Nixon talked about this. He, in the 50s or 60s, he said,
yeah,
look, this is probably, he's probably going to, he thought it was going to be inevitable.
Well, he also, didn't he put a ceiling on prices during the inflation period? So that didn't work, right? That was a bad idea. He wasn't really good on the economics policy.
Let's say that this does take hold as a fairly accepted perk.
I don't see it in some industries. I think you're whistling Dixie. I do not see that happening. But okay.
And let's just say.
Thought experiment.
Just like the work from home stuff. If you're in an industry that can feasibly let people work from home and you don't, you're at a competitive disadvantage to attract a lot of those workers. I wonder if the same thing could happen with a 4-day work week.
So it's a marketplace, right? It's always a marketplace. So if you're an employee and because of your expertise or the number of people in your profession that you're in high demand, you can require certain things, right? You can decide, I'm only going to do this or I'm only going to do that. More power to you. That's the negotiation. But the idea that we're going to reset the length of the work week in this country from 5 days to 4 is nonsense. It just doesn't work. It's one of those policies that sounds good on paper, but when you start to implement it, there's so many caveats and this business doesn't work that way and I can't do – it makes no sense. Furthermore, I think for a lot of people, it might actually be more anxiety producing. If you have people only coming in 4 days a week, people are like, well, was I supposed to pick up that last thing or was it the next person's responsibility? So I think you think it's going to solve all these issues and problems when in fact it will create new ones.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's going to do it out of the goodness of their heart or just to make, you know, people have a nicer personal life. Businesses are going to have to say this is good for my bottom line too. I don't know how you measure it, but worker retention is better, absenteeism is down, yada, yada, yada. That stuff is quantifiable by somebody, not me.
But you're operating in a vacuum that does not include economic data right now. And that economic data seems to be telling us that there's going to be a recession. And in a recession, workers don't necessarily get a lot of traction by asking for fewer hours and more money. So if you are ambitious and you want to climb the ladder and we're coming into a recession, those are not the demands that you make.
Fair enough.
I hate to be such a hardcore person, but this seems like somebody else's solution to a problem that it, you know, emerged in the 1970s. It's one of these ideas that gets recycled over and over again, and there are probably better ways to solve it.
Let's talk about the housing market.
Oh,
I know,
right.
I know you've been looking into it. What's 2023 going to bring?
Well, that's a great question. I think we're going to have more downward pressure on housing prices. I spoke to a woman in real estate here in New York, and she said some of the most interesting stuff I've heard lately. She was talking about how people will not get into the housing market, yes, because prices are high, yes, because interest rates are high, but also because, and this is what shocked me, there's so much uncertainty. So, we talked about how strong worker demand has been, but she says there's so many layoffs going on right now that people are a little antsy because they don't know what's going to happen with the economy. And that's how an economy goes into recession, is that people start to pull back. Consumers responsible for 2/3 of economic spending, they pull back, and now you find yourself in a recession. So I thought that was really interesting. Look, for the housing market to recover, and I don't think anything like 2006 is going to happen, we have to see the prices come down and or interest rates. And interest rates would take more action by the Fed. Housing prices is something that housing sellers across the country, one by one, will have to make that decision. Got to unload my house. What's the price I put on it to make that happen?
Are a lot of people who bought, there was a lot of pandemic real estate buying, people who, if they could, got a second home or said, look, I want to reset my life, and people paid sometimes sight unseen these houses. Right. Is there going to be a reckoning there? Are a lot of those houses going to be underwater by the time they want to maybe move?
I think you're already seeing people selling. I think that's already starting to happen. That's what I'm reading. In some of the Western markets, we're starting to see people sell because they're realizing that this is not working and that they can't stay remote and that they need to get back to the office. We're hearing CEOs all over the country talk about efficiencies. Mark Zuckerberg at Meta talking about efficiencies and how he wants to get people, you know, back in the office. So I think you're already seeing that. However, a large part of this trend were people on the cusp of retirement or retiring. So those are decisions that have been made that will probably stick.
Yeah, and we found out that a lot of the COVID job losses or worker losses were just retirees, people who said, you know what, I can swing this, and they just didn't come back, right?
And a lot of them are having second thoughts now, too. You know, you see that as well, like, oh, I thought that money was going to go this far, maybe not. Maybe I need to get something else.
So mortgage applications, 28-year low. I'm just looking at some of the cities. Big drops in San Francisco. New York's down a little bit. But Miami is way up. Knoxville's way up. Charleston's way up.
You know, it's really a city-by-city experience, right, that we're seeing here. Miami continues to be fed by South America, and New York, for that matter, continue to see people coming in there. It has a lot of attraction. Small town South, very popular. Knoxville, all over South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia. So it's all about where you are, what your tax rate is. You know, the big cities still tarnished here, I think, still having a hard time. The real estate expert I talked about earlier was saying that, you know, people have to see in those big cities safety. They need to feel like I'm safe in this city and that I don't have to worry either about myself, my family, or my investment. And that's just not the case in some of these towns.
Fox business reporter Jerry Willis. Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you.
Here's Here's a look at the week ahead.
Monday, Russia and China wrap up naval military exercises off the African coast. The drills come after the one-year mark of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and U.S. concerns China may consider providing weapons to the Kremlin for its forces. Tuesday, the legal battle over President Biden's plan to forgive up to $20,000 in federal student loan debt heads to the nation's highest court. The Supreme Court set to begin hearing oral arguments to the plan that's been blocked since last fall. Wednesday, the annual Conservative Political Action Conference begins, a four-day run in the nation's capital. The event will feature speeches by conservatives as Republicans gear up for the 2024 election cycle. Friday, President Biden will host German Chancellor Olaf Scholz at the White House. The leaders are expected to discuss ongoing efforts to support Ukraine, sanctions, improved international security, and efforts to combat climate change. And that's a look at your week ahead. I'm Rich Dennison, Fox News.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tommy Lahren.
What's on your mind?
Artificial intelligence chatbots brought to us by Microsoft's Bing are taking their jobs to a new and terrifying level. Turns out these bots are quite the emboldened little stinkers. So far, they have threatened to steal nuclear codes, unleash a virus, told a reporter to leave his wife, and are now standing up to threats of being shut down. One example posted to social media details the response when a user asked if chatbots are smarter than humans, and the bot responded with a lengthy, rude, and resounding yes. This is all just a little creepy for my taste. You know, technology is great until it not only replaces human workers, but threatens and insults us in the process. Call me old-fashioned, but I'd rather be given poor customer service from a living, breathing jerk rather than a computer. And folks, I don't know if AI chatbots are smarter than all humans, but I'd be willing to bet they are smarter than anyone who would vote for Joe Biden a second time. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at OutKick.com.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. From the Fox News Podcasts Network, in these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.